Good morning with KUAC News. I'm Dan Bross. Flags are at half-staff in honor of a soldier from Alaska killed overseas. A release from Governor Bill Walker's office says Private First Class Hanson Kirkpatrick of Wasilla died Monday of injuries suffered in an incident while he was on patrol in Helmand Province, Afghanistan. Kirkpatrick was based in Fort Bliss, Texas, and deployed to Afghanistan as part of Operation Freedom Sentinel. The state is turning to the private sector to manage five Delta Junction area parks partially closed last week due to budget cuts. As KUAC's Tim Ellis reports, State Parks is soliciting proposals from prospective contractors to operate the facilities along the Richardson Highway.
Nancy Schooley Williams is a retired Delta school teacher who enjoys getting out in the summer and camping in the area's six state parks. So she was very disappointed last weekend when she went to her favorite park, the Clearwater State Recreation Site.
The bathroom doors are locked. And for some reason, the handle is taking off the water pump, so people can't even get water.
Williams was among many other unhappy campers and anglers and picnickers who'd gone to the Clearwater or other Delta area campgrounds over the long July 4th weekend, only to discover they'd been placed under so-called passive management, meaning they're sort of semi-closed, accessible but without any of the usual amenities.
It was just the most friendly and welcoming campground I had ever seen. And the thought of it being closed up is just very, very distressing.
Williams says she talks with a lot of tourists as part of her volunteer job at the Sullivan House, an old roadhouse in Delta that's been preserved and now serves as a museum of area history. She says the park's cutbacks are going to hurt Delta's tourism economy.
I'm always recommending certain campgrounds, you know, that are good. And now it's really hard to recommend any campground that doesn't have a toilet.
State Parks Superintendent Brooks Ludwig says the agency closed the six Delta area parks at the end of last week to accommodate funding cuts included in the legislature's overall state operating budget that was nearly $146 million less than last year's.
We had to wait to the very end of the budget cycle to see whether the money was put in, and unfortunately it wasn't.
Ludwig says the budget cuts forced state parks to shut down the agency's office in Delta and lay off the seasonal worker who took care of the area's parks. That was among 10 positions in Delta, Fairbanks, and Harding Lake that were cut this fiscal year.
These are the folks that do all the painting of the park fixtures, the cleaning of the toilets, the mowing of the lawns.
Ludwig says in response, state parks will try to contract out management of five Delta area parks and leave Fielding Lake State Recreation Area near Isabel Pass in passive management. He says the agency had to resort to contracting out 2 years ago when budget cuts forced reductions at parks around Sitka, and again last year when it cut funding for Valdez area parks.
It's just unfortunate that we can't afford to run them.
Ludwig says the contractors must maintain the facilities and keep them safe. He says they'll have to pay state parks a flat fee up front, and in exchange, it'll get to keep all the fees it charges park users. He says that'll likely increase the cost for those users, who may, for example, see the price of renting a space in the campground go up from $15 to $20 a night.
We've got some interest out there, you know. I've been contacted by at least five or six people that are interested in potentially putting in a proposal.
Ludwig says Delta area parks generate an average of $80,000 a year, most of which comes from its Clearwater and Quartz Lake facilities. He says proposals to manage the parks must be submitted by July 21st, and that State Parks hopes to award a contract by mid-August. With help from Dan Bross, I'm Tim Ellis in Fairbanks.
Five new wildfires were reported in the state yesterday, but only one is being worked. Smoke jumpers are deployed on the five-acre lightning-caused Big Lake Fire northwest of the Yukon Flats village of Beaver. It's among six staff wildfires statewide, including the over 23,000 Campbell River blaze in the Arctic National Wildlife Refuge, where 34 firefighters are working to protect cabins and native land allotments. Overall, it's been a slow wildfire season in the state. As of this morning, 273 fires have burned 220,000 acres, and State Division of Forestry spokesman Tim Mowry says that puts 2017 on track to tally well below normal.
In a typical season, we average about 1.2 million acres a year and about 500 fires.
Mowry cautions that even less acreage had burned as of this time last year when an uptick in activity boosted the total. He says that could happen this year, but normally mid-July trends toward cooler, wetter weather.
Our fire season season typically tails off in mid-July.
There's really two parts to summer.
National Weather Service Climate Science and Services Manager Rick Toman says the first part of the summer is dominated by warmer temperatures and thunderstorms conducive to wildfire activity. He says that's expected to continue this week, but the longer-range forecast indicates a transition to a westerly storm track typical of the second half of the summer.
We're getting significantly past the summer solstice, so in the high latitudes, we're already starting to lose the peak of that solar heating. Meanwhile, at the lower latitudes, particularly the oceans, of course, continue to warm. So starting to get a little bit more temperature difference, and that helps drive those storms.
Toman says the pattern is characterized by more steady rainfall. It's reflected in Alaska Wildfire Fighting Agency's annual July 10th reclassification of large areas of the state to a lower response category and a corresponding ramp down in suppression operations. Forestry's Maori says aviation resources are already being downsized.
The two big scoopers, the CL-415s from the U.S. Forest Service that have been up here, were released, so they'll be heading south.
Maori says the state is hanging on to smaller water scooping planes, retardant tankers, and helicopters for a while longer. Alaska firefighting personnel have also yet to be made available for lower 48 assignments. When the Alaska legislature passed the state budget on June 22nd, it also voted for the first time to cut money for permanent fund dividends. The move followed Governor Bill Walker's similar halving of PFDs last year. As Alaska Public Media and KTOO's Andrew Kitchenman reports, PFD reductions affect some Alaskans more than others.
Ben Nikuzik needs a snow machine to get around Hooper Bay, an 1,100-person city on Alaska's Bering Sea coast. He was planning on using his permanent fund dividend in October to make a down payment on a new one.
A lot of the families rely on the PFD, so they can purchase the big ticket items, especially on the good years.
And 2017 was going to be a good year. Years of investment growth were on track to push PFDs past $2,300. Without adjusting for inflation, that's the highest in the fund's history. But the legislature cut funding to 1,100. His household has 11 people, including his children's families and two foster kids. That means they'll lose more than $13,000. That's close to half of their household income.
For people like us, that's a big deal.
Hooper Bay is in the Kusilvak census area, where the average loss of household income would be more than 10%. That's the highest loss in the state. Juneau residents would lose 3%, the lowest loss. Nikuzik says he's frustrated the legislature enacted the funding cut without passing a plan to balance the state's budget in the future.
I wish they'd get their act together.
State Fish and Game Commissioner Sam Cotton was a state representative when the state started PFDs in 1982. He says lawmakers knew then that it would be difficult to reduce dividends once they were started. Cotton expresses sympathy for residents from lower income portions of the state who feel they're carrying the burden for balancing the budget.
But if you reduce or eliminate dividends as the only measure, then that's not a fair approach.
House members say the plan and future PFD cuts should depend on adding oil and gas taxes and a broad-based tax. Senators reject that approach and say a permanent fund plan should be passed on its own. In Juneau, I'm Andrew Kitchenman.
And I'm Dan Bross.